This is a production of Cornell University.
UA meeting, November
28th,
2007.
Go ahead.
So, first we want to welcome some guests, but we'll welcome them as we introduce them. The roll call is by virtue of signing in, so everybody please make sure they've signed in to the down there. Are there any late items to the agenda? I have a couple, but others can bring up one. Randy?
Resolution about the master plan.
Right, resolution about the master plan. You have a copy of that. That's a late edition. We'll add that at the end of new business. Master plan resolution. Anybody else? Yes, David.
We might want to think about a subcommittee to discuss the upcoming conversation with the provost.
Okay, so we can fold that into the master plan resolution too, but let's do it at the same time.
Yes.
Okay. Subcommittee on provost meeting. Uh-huh. Any others? I had two. One was small, that was approval of minutes, and I'd like to do that actually as the first item before, if you don't mind, Dean Walcott's this presentation of academic integrity. The other one is I want to propose, and we can either get to it now or the first meeting of next semester, but it would make sense to do something about it now because then it would change next semester's. I would like to propose that we move meetings around the campus to different venues, North Campus, West Campus, and maybe even the engineering school. The point being that we could take ourselves to different places and maybe engage other constituencies, or at least show people that we are representative of them a little bit more immediately. So I'd like to put that on the agenda if we have the time, rather than discuss it now, but we'll leave it to after the master plan and subcommittee discussion. Okay, first the approval of minutes. Those of you who glance at them quickly, I've taken a look through, and maybe some of you have in the time before the meeting. I see only two small corrections, and I'll give them to you on hard copy.
Are they in the name section?
No.
Okay. There were a couple of names that were misspelled.
Okay. Yeah, check your name. Make sure you've got it spelled correctly, but I'm sure it's easy.
I got it already.
Okay. Can I entertain a motion to accept the minutes? Or are there any corrections? Any motion to accept? Randy Wayne, second. Alice, got it. Okay, all in favor accepting minutes? Great. They stand approved. L opposed? No. They stand approved. And we have the honor and pleasure of having Dean Charles Walcott amongst us again, and he will be just making a brief presentation about his hopes for discussion of academic integrity.
Thank you, Marty. One of the issues that came up a number of years ago in this body was the whole issue of academic integrity at the university. It's a continued problem. It's a problem not just for students, it's a problem for faculty. The procedures are perceived by many faculty to be very cumbersome and very difficult, and therefore cases of academic integrity are not followed through by the faculty. There has been some discussion of whether it might be desirable to have an honor code. There is an honor code in the vet school and the law school, but not in any of the undergraduate colleges. And it seemed to me that the time now that we've gotten through the code of conduct, that this might be an opportunity time to form a small subcommittee to think about the issues of academic integrity and whether we have an optimum system here or whether it could be improved. And it seems to me this is a discussion that needs to take place between students, both undergraduate and graduate, faculty, and academic support staff, who are all very much involved in this issue. Technically, the responsibility for the academic integrity lies with the faculty. But I think in this case, it would be very helpful to have this kind of general discussion, which would include some faculty members, to try and see if, as a group, we can figure out a better way of doing these things, and whether we have, as I said, the optimum system. I think if it's decided just by the faculty, that nothing much is very likely to happen. So that would be my suggestion, and I think the question I would raise with this group is, does this seem like a good idea?
Yes.
I guess, I mean, I came from a high school with a very strong sort of UVA-led honor code. So, I mean, I really think that it's sort of it's an all-or-nothing issue. You kind of have to go all out, really, student force, basically UVA-style honor code, or I guess have what we have, which is, you know, I guess most of our tests have some sort of honor commitment that you sign or something, but it's very, I guess, professor-specific in how it's laid out, and it's very personal. So the way I see it, I mean, I definitely support a committee to sort of look at it. And I think that there would have to be some sort of student referendum or some sort of student, entire student population input on whether, you know, we wanted to move towards a more formal system of teaching the way it is.
I've forgotten which of the student undergraduates are representatives from the student assembly.
I am Steve, who's not here today.
Okay. What occurred to me, and I had a conversation with Dean Walcott about this, was that if we had a couple of people from the university assembly who could take on not the responsibility of deciding whether we need to have this, or even once we decide we need to have it, setting up the whole mechanism for having it go forward, but simply the question of how to a sort of preliminary think through group about what problems. If we could have a couple of representatives, and I would think one from undergraduate, one from graduate, and one faculty, or except one undergraduate and one graduate would be most useful. That Dean Walcott was suggesting, I think, if I'm correct in this, that he could provide people, just like in the Codes and Judicial Committee, we don't have everybody on the Codes and Judicial Committee from the UA. In fact, only one person is, and that person is a non-voting member. We could have something like a committee of that sort set up, drawing heavily on faculty representation from the Faculty Senate, let's say, or outside the Senate, but having a UA representative or two who could discuss this with those people in committee, and we could get somewhere. The UA participation would be helpful, because as Dean Walcott says, that would be our way of engaging with the issue. Is there anyone from the graduate student constituent here from graduate student tomorrow? I don't want to volunteer single people, but I have one undergraduate member, Chris, has expressed an interest. Chris, yes?
Yes.
Would you be willing to do that kind of engagement?
Absolutely.
Right. Tomorrow, would you? Well, what kind of time commitment could you imagine at the outset? I think probably a meeting or two to decide what it is needs to be done.
I think that's right, and I think we probably need some staff help to do some of the legwork. That is, for instance, we clearly ought to get a copy of the University of Virginia's honor code, so we could all look at it.
Yeah.
Might be interesting to look at the University of Colorado, which has also adopted Virginia's code, but modified it somewhat. It'd be interesting to look at what some other universities have done. All this information exists out there. It's just a matter of somebody gathering it up, and we all having a chance to look at it and talk about it.
Right.
So I don't know, you know, in terms of time commitment, I would hope that we could make significant progress in 3 to 4 1-hour meetings, that kind of thing. But I don't know. It depends how people feel about all this. Maybe once we look at it, we'll decide that what we have is the best of all possible worlds, and we can all go home. But maybe not.
Yes.
I'm curious about something, and my memory serves me correct. One of the things that initiated our discussion was the decision by Gannett to no longer supply excuses for people, which raised issues of, well, what if somebody's lied and honest? Certainly you have an ear to a much broader constituency than I might have. Are there really problems out there? I mean, aside from apocryphal kinds of stories of too much cheating.
No, there are very severe problems out there. There are a substantial number of graduate students who I've heard from who tell me that they have put students blatantly cheating on examinations, but the faculty member in charge of the course refuses to do anything about it because it's a pain to do. And I think that's a terrible way to train teaching future faculty members. There is a substantial amount of academic dishonesty that occurs in most of our large courses. There is a substantial amount of plagiarism that is occurring, and I know that the TechCon Center and a number of other groups are hard at work trying to figure out how to do a better job of explaining to students what the proper attribution is like and the evils of plagiarism. So I think there's a lot that's kind of going on, but I don't think it's been kind of focused in a very general discussion.
Yeah. I don't want to go too far in this because I think the purpose of the committee would be to explore this very kind of, you know, these questions. Although I think the UA members can submit, you know, whatever kind of inquiries they have about it, and that the committee can look at it tomorrow. Yes.
I want to speak to the
members. Oh, okay. Well, I think that's you would, Dan, as well.
No.
Oh, okay. Well, then. Is it a question that would involve evaluating whether we should have any discussion of this or at all? Or
I don't know. I just have the impression that this is all going to be closed.
Well, the point is that I think the committee can work on that. I think that the dean's request is worthwhile, at least for us to. I mean, the Codes and Judicial Committee, let me put it this way, the Codes and Judicial Committee had this brought up to it many times in the course of its deliberations about the code, and it left it out because it would have just opened a whole new area that it hasn't had anything to do with, and it had enough on its plate. I think there's enough energy around it, we'd be, by saying it's something the colleges do, leave it to colleges, we'd be ignoring a large constituency of interest. And I think we ought to address that by at least having a committee that looks great, or at least participating in a committee.
And the answer is no, it's not left to the colleges. The overall arching procedure is that of the university faculty, which provides a general framework for how academic integrity is to be considered. And the individual colleges can bring changes on that if they wish, but the overall framework is at the university.
So we have two representatives, Mara and Chris. All right.
And I wrote their names
down. Okay. And Molly can get the emails and we can put them. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Our next item on the agenda is presentation by representatives from the campus store. Actually, Rodney will be in charge of this.
Okay. We'd like to welcome Gary Swisher and Margie Whiteleather from the campus store. I believe they're going to give us a little presentation of what's been happening with them and what they're looking at possibly for the future, and then open it up to some questions.
Thanks. We do send regrets from our director, Tom Romain. with you. I'm relatively new to, not to the store necessarily, but to interacting with groups like yours, so help me out as we go along here. We've sort of created a general overview of what's going on with us, what we think is important right now, but I think we're really interested in your perspective and your feedback. So stop us anytime, or we'll rip through these slides real quickly and we'll have time for discussion. So our mission, we think, is pretty well aligned with that of the university, and that's providing products and services to the key initiatives of teaching, learning, research, and outreach. And we're an enterprise unit, so we are responsible for costs and returning some bottom line to the university. Last year, we had about $24 million in sales. That's an impressive number, but over 70% of it goes right back to the vendors that we source the product from. A handful of 7% goes to the university directly as overhead expenses, and then we have about 13% personnel costs. There's not a lot of flex in that number.
It doesn't add up to 100%.
It does not add up to 100% because we haven't counted systems costs, utilities, insurance, blah, blah, blah. There's not a 9% bottom line tied in or anything like that. So, sort of top down for us, and these tend to be things we were on a multi-year track on. Our first and greatest priority is to support the academic mission with course materials. And that's a market and a business that's evolving, not at the pace of change that some of us might anticipate, and in some cases, even from our perspective and directions that we're not very delighted about, but we're really trying to figure out how can we do the best job for students and faculty providing the most cost-effective solutions for course materials. We're really looking at electronic means of communicating more effectively with our entire customer base, and we've invested a lot in systems and infrastructure, and now in some going to school with some people to teach us how to understand our data, do segmentation, and communicate to you in a good context. A significant number of our student customers and a decent number of faculty and staff have given us permission to market to them by participating in our Swipe and Link promotion, and we've really tried to be respectful of that, not inundating you with spam, overwhelming you with trying to make our information contextual, important, vital. I think most of you have probably gotten an email from us in the last 24 hours about the customer appreciation sale Thursday and Friday. And if you haven't, come on down, 20% off almost everything in the store. In this day and age, we need to be very much more effective e-commerce in terms of serving not just the local community, but moms and dads, alums, people like that. As we look at revenue opportunities for the store, we see that as a growth potential, and so we're putting a lot of attention into upgrading our e-commerce platform. If you have feedback about how bad the one we have today is, you can save it because we really know it stinks. We're very focused on trying to provide the best level of customer service, and that's really internally. We're doing a lot of process and people realignment to make sure we're really delivering the goods that you get a great experience when you come to the store. We're focused to the extent possible on working more closely with departments and student organizations, and a lot of that is very below the radar kind of stuff. But, you know, individually, none of them are overwhelmingly impressive. They get us excited. But as a mass, it's quite a bit of a lot of great relationships we're building on campus. And then, you know, we want to be a great place to work just like anywhere else in Cornell that's exciting and that keeps people like me and Margie happy to come to work every morning. Specifically, the course materials, this has been a very focused effort for us over a couple of years, and we've dramatically increased the supply of these books. It's now 38% of the units that we stocked last academic year. We're on track to equal or exceed that this year, and that's, you know, love it or hate it, that's the most cost-effective way or a significant way to save students money on course materials. It's a business that our students and customers demand that we're in it, and we're very focused on making that happen. By request of directly from the student assembly,
A couple of representatives came to us about a year ago at this time asking that we provide ISBN information on the corporate class schedule, and we did that in August.
And our sales dropped 30%, so they're going up. No, it actually had no impact on sales. I mean, the some of us had been predicting that would be the outcome, and we were delighted to have that validated. So thank you for asking, and we're glad that we could come through. And we are also sending out now, and you'll start seeing these starting Monday, customized buyback price lists by email. So if you have a title that we're able to buy retail that we're looking for use for spring semester, and we think you own it because it's on your current schedule, we'll send you an email saying, hey, we can pay you 50% for that book. Overwhelmingly positive feedback that we've got from students, and it's driven a lot of our increase in use books. You can also get your whole buyback list on the web. That was a new wrinkle just last semester. It's a little more enhanced this time. We're glad to do that. We feel obligated just to provide options. We've been playing around in the ebook market. Very volatile, not with a lot of traction. I mean, we've got three different programs or vendors, programs with three different vendors going. Over three semesters, we've sold about 100 ebooks. So not a lot of traction there. But as this product, as a textbook evolves, we think we need to be there at the delivery. We want to be there at the delivery chain, so we're trying to do whatever we can there. We've got, I think, a really interesting relationship going with the library based on some of their content. So we did some things for the Ezra 200th anniversary that were products that we sold in the store based on either materials or content they developed. We did something in conjunction with the Dalai Lama visit. We're looking for future exhibitions and collections in the spring. And that's exciting, that's because we're the Cornell store. And so we want to dig a little bit deeper into the community. And at some point, we're going to hit the limit of how many things you can just slap Cornell on that people are going to want to buy. And thank God there's a lot of that. People that want to buy, but we'd like to present things that are a little richer context and have a little more meaning in terms of the product. I think we did a monster job of pre, during, and after the Dalai Lama visit with authors and lecturers talking about it, just the broad array of issues, whether they're political, historical, religious, lifestyle, food, all sorts of stuff. It was a great opportunity for us, and we work closely with the library to bring this big swath of speakers and great attendance at many of them, and we think we do say so ourselves. We get that one out of the park, so we're really happy. I don't know if you've read or heard, and they're not quite done yet, and we don't know why, but we're doing a test solar project that will have just about enough electricity generated to light the tower, I think. So it's huge savings, but really it's a demonstration project, and we're happy to be part of it. We do annually give out a lot of money, whether it's in-kind, in-store credit, merchandise, or just outright cash grants. We don't have a strict policy other than if you have a really good story and you get to it at a good time, you know, we're likely to say yes to you. It's very rare for us to turn somebody down flat. And we do play a modest role in distributing the first-year reading programs. We're very metrics-focused, and for us, that's a pretty holistic approach. We look at how we're affecting customers, how badly or well we're treating our employees, and then some bottom line measurements for sure. So we do really well, and then we compare those to our peer stores throughout the country, large stores, institutionally operated stores. And we find that in particular, we do a really good job at 13%, which seems like maybe a big number. We're among the most productive in terms of sales to FTE, sales to employee dollars. Our return on investment in inventory, so Cornell's money that we're putting into goods that are coming on the shelves, we get a very high return on that investment through effectively managing our inventory and pricing products right and not buying stuff that people hate that we have to mark down. And the store seems big, but at 22,000 square feet, it's really small for the amount of business we do. And our sales per square foot are among the highest in the industry. As you know, we flop the textbook department in and out seasonally. That's a big overhead, but it's the only way we can think of to maximize the space. And we're very focused on getting customer satisfaction surveys. We do, we coordinate with an annual organization that has a standardized survey, and we can benchmark responses against other stores. We do a broad customer survey every year. In the spring, we'll do the faculty. So, I don't know if it's the even or the odd years, but every other year we do the broad customer and then faculty-specific surveys. And people love us. Actually, they like everything except parking, hours, and textbook prices. Other than that, we're talking. Some of the stuff that's kind of topical for us. We have a good relationship and certainly an ongoing one with the local chapter of Students Against Sweatshops, talking about the designated supplier program. And as that seems to be, you know, we're not part of that dialogue. That's Cornell is part of that dialogue with other institutions, but that program doesn't seem to be rolling forward with any kind of speed. And so our interest with that group this year shifted to what can we do to source products that come from ethical, identified, appropriately managed facilities and bring those products in for sale. That's what I think we met for the first time just a couple weeks ago with that group this year, and that's where we're headed with them, our agenda this year. We have a pretty good, I think, commitment early in the bandwagon in terms of 100% recycled, in terms of the zero graphic paper we sell, our notebooks, post-consumer content. Our bags are now recyclable. I don't know if people know that. They are plastic bags, but they are from recycled bags, and they are recyclable. We do, as I said, the regular surveys, and we are, I think, one of the best schools in the country in terms of our stores representing schools in the country at really using technology. And one of the reasons we're as efficient as we are in space and inventory personnel is I think we're pretty smart with technology. Just in case you want to regret that, because it's on a bullet up there. And so, you know, we're coming to the close of the spiel here, and we really do want to hear how can we do it better. Where are we letting people down? We have not a phenomenal high profile role in the community, but we think we can be very strategic in helping people certainly acquire their course materials, represent the brand of Cornell effectively, and things like that. So, you know, in general, that kind of feedback is welcome. And then specifically, what should our relationship with you be? And I don't have any idea. So if you do, we're happy to come, we're happy to do this, we're happy to answer specific questions, but, you know, do we have a relationship that's ongoing, or tell me what you want to hear.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions from the or comments? Couldn't speak up, sorry.
With regards to the inventory of ebooks, are those going to be downloadable? Are they downloadable now?
They are downloadable now, so.
Okay.
Yeah.
And can you buy books online at all?
In the Cornell store today, you cannot buy books online. Yes. So, the bullet about e-commerce, we really have a very primitive e-commerce solution today, and part of our, as we launch that, we will have something in place by the end of the next year. My presumption is that by fall, next fall, we'll be in a position to do some sort of selling e-books over on the web. Operationally, put them up on the, and take, you know, set up a shopping cart and bill any for it, that's not hard. It's logistically to support them and just throw behind it and stumble around. Part of it is our tiny footprint and the fact that we're so isolated on campus. Most stores that do that are in student centers that rent a ballroom to stage the product that people have bought. We don't have any place to shoot more of that stuff, so we have to find some depot. Again, it's high on our list.
I wanted to ask a quick comment. When I first related to ebooks, the limiting factor there is the match between the publishers who've chosen to convert their titles to ebook format and whether those titles match what's adopted for use at Cornell. And every semester, the return of data washes a very small number of titles, numbers of 10 to 15 new titles. And then of the ones that we've offered for sale, usually the sales are not evenly distributed. There might be one or two titles where we're selling 8 ebooks and the others we sell 1 or 0. There's a lot of complexity in the movement of the players in the ebook market, and no compelling solution to be made. And then other quick thing on online sales of textbooks. In the early days of online shopping, our perception was that the student body was largely residential and close by and didn't need the convenience of shipping. And a lot of our peers that served commuter campuses needed to get in the mail order shipping of textbooks earlier. We're probably now at the point where people expect that type of convenience, if they're very vocal, so we're looking into it. But we definitely need to have a good dialogue with students before we go too far into it. We tested a textbook reservation system for several Augusts, and we found that we would pull the books from the shelf, we're very similar to resources, to pull the books back and set them aside, and fewer than half of them were picked up, partly because we think it's been so convenient for students to come in and pull the books from the shelf themselves. So it's something we're very aware of.
Randy.
I'm curious about how do textbook prices compare with the rate of inflation?
Well, there's no question, and it's unfortunately too well documented. Textbook prices even outstrip college tuitions in terms of their percentage increases. They may lag pharmaceuticals a little bit, but that's about the only thing.
I'm going to start advertising. So did you have any suggestions of how we can contribute to lowering the price?
In textbooks in particular, nearly 80 cents out of every dollar of our sales going back to the publisher. And so there's very little margin in that product. So the publishers are really, from my perspective, the culprit of why the prices are so high. We try to, and counsel isn't a very good word to use because we have to be very respectful of faculty. We're the book butlers. We're not in a position, or we want to be in a position to tell you what to adopt for a class. But where professors are choosing products where we think there are maybe more cost-effective alternatives, or they've selected a bundle and has the study guide, has a speaker, has some other class track thrown in there, we'll say, is that stuff really important to you and your class? And a lot of people say, no, that just came, that's just what the pub rep showed me, that's how I thought I had to buy it. And then we can, if we don't have to replicate that bundle, we can drive down the cost of students potentially. So we have that kind of dialogue, but not in a formal way with faculty. And then it's tough, frequently, we don't know the price of products often until they're shipped to us. Mm-hmm. And I think faculty members were more persistent with the publisher to say, well, how much is that going to cost? And there it's funny because some publishers will quote what they'll sell it to us for, which of course is not the retail. We'd like to know. We know a lot about textbook procurement, and we have some ideas how to help people to cut costs a little bit, but we wouldn't presume to say to you, well, if you teach for this course, then I'll teach for
this. James, you have something.
Yeah, this is actually more of an operational thing, but I know you said that the plastic bags are recyclable. I know the plastic recyclable things we have on campus are mainly for plastic bottles, but I think that would be something really good if students knew that. Can you put them in any plastic recycling container, or is it a certain type of recycling that can only go in a certain type of container? Do you have any idea?
I honestly don't know. I know we have a place that will take the bags.
Okay.
And when I go to the grocery store, I can't put those bags in my recycle pickup.
Okay.
At the curb, but I can take them back to the store, and maybe we can at least that in the works.
Okay.
That would be good.
Yeah. So we can promote that.
You said that you joked about sales go up 30% for the ISBN. I presume it was because the students could then go to Amazon.com and put the ISBN number. But that hasn't happened. But how do the prices compare? Would a student do that at all, going to Amazon.com versus knowing the ISBN?
Right. Amazon.com specifically, and that's the company, not the marketplace of individual sellers, our prices are typically pretty competitive with them. And we got a lot of feedback, actually, from this fall from students saying, your prices really don't look that bad compared to Amazon. A lot of that, we see really anomalous prices on Amazon. And they've got a gazillion titles in their database. When they have bad data, they'll get the wrong price, they'll put their cost up there. We know what the books are worth. And Amazon has a pub, but nobody has textbook publishers in terms of getting that deal. And so we understand pretty much what they're paying for. And a lot of it just seems like it's a data problem. But that really hurts us when you see a book that's $40 less than what we're selling at Amazon. We don't make that book ahead of it. It doesn't do anything. Any book we sell, you can pretty much find at a much more aggressive price somewhere. And that's often
and peer-to-peer stuff. So I'm somebody somewhere who owns this book, and I'm willing to let go for 35 times because it's written by somebody that's a $100 book. But then it's on you to connect with each of those peer or whoever they are, and, you know, whether it's eBay or Half.com or Amazon. So it depends on how much you want to pay in shipping, how much aggravation you want to put up with, how much uncertainty. We think that with our increasing use books, if you take the market basket look, you know, and again, what can I say about this? If you look at our price and the convenience, the flexibility of returns and all that we offer, we think we're pretty compelling. So we weren't that worried about putting ISP and stuff, and as it turns out, it was this semester, there was some.
Sure.
How about the used book market? It seems to me that that's a way of saving a substantial amount of money. Is there a sufficient supply of used books, or is there a shortage? I mean, how does that market work?
There's never enough used books, and you know, demand far outstrips the supply, and that's one of the reasons, you know, publishers try to help with that as much as they can by revising books constantly.
Of course,
the market doesn't know. Our best source of used books is our students. And for us to pay the best price to students and to buy as many copies as we can, we need to know that that book's being used in a subsequent term. And so our tireless and Margie's certainly efforts harping on you and your department coordinators to say, get the adoption, it's really to drive that proposition. And we not only buy from students, there are networks of national wholesalers. The books that we can't, that we know we won't use next semester, we sell off the chain, and then we repurchase those. And so the earlier we can be in that market, and every day we're shopping, we're hitting their inventory daily, and we shop multiple wholesalers. So the sooner we know a book's going to be used, the greater the probability that we'll have a high percentage of use on the shelf. So even though those deadlines seem absurdly early to many people, and rationally, you guys can understand that, there's a powerful incentive in terms of student savings to get those books.
I think that's a very important message to get to faculty, because I don't think any of us had any idea of that. I thought we were subsisting largely on our own student books. And I think that would be an important message to get across.
Yeah, this is good to come in a message to us to know kind of that might seem early just happening to
have any problems. Okay.
So we're likely to do more and more emailing to faculty, and we're just curious, you know, that we don't want that to become intrusive, but we now have the ability to, we just send a general announcement to all faculty several days before the debate. And we're one of the system investments we're working on right now is to try to personalize some emails so we could actually send you those to books and use the last time you saw the and much easier to respond.
And I'll say that's another, again, you need to be in the business of choosing what you're going to teach from. But if you can use the same materials that you've used previously, we know those books exist on campus to increase them. So if you're largely indifferent, sticking with the same book is a way to help save money.
Dave.
I can't hear you.
I was wondering if you considered setting up a peer-to-peer auction.
I think we're willing to do that, and we're right now looking at a suite of like web course materials tools that include a peer-to-peer proposition.
Ellis.
You can confirm something that over the years I've seen the percentage of floor space devoted to what I would call non-academic aspects of the store increase dramatically to the detriment of trade books and even a collection of magazines. Has this been driven by keeping the profit line where it is? In other words, are textbook sales basically flat and you're just keeping up with increased costs? Or are you forced to take the space you have and put in another rack of sweatshirts? I'm not saying that's bad.
No,
if
right.
You go to the University of Georgia, you can't even buy a book until you walk through aisles and aisles of other stuff and piles of coat bottles and things. So I'm just curious as to whether you see this as a trend that more and more of what the store offers will be except for those few times a year when textbooks are dominant, are more and more what I would call non-academic service items, posters, and things like that.
Yeah, you're killing me, because I'm a book guy. I came into the business through the book business, and it's tough to make a living selling trade books. Textbooks do have an in and out, because the bulk sells down, and we can keep the books on the floor for a long time, but the bulk disappears, so the footprint really shrinks. Trade books, I think, pre-internet, pre-superstore, I think college stores had a real responsibility to provide access. And to, you know, and the access just is not a value add anymore. And so we're not going to out BNN, BNN, we're not going to out Amazon, Amazon. And our sales certainly reflect that. So we need to be responsible at some level to our use of inventory dollars and space. At the same time, boy, I'm really passionately committed to see that we're supporting the academic mission of the institution, not just through textbooks, but through non-textbooks. I think we're trying to get more event-minded, so whether that's, you know, topical things on campus, because we just can't sign 135,000 titles. I mean, I'd try. We could do that. I'd be so happy. But we just can't afford to do it, and nor would the sales support. And we really run our trade business barely at break-even. That's, and we have no profit expectation whatsoever in this area. So I don't think it's going to get any worse, is what I would tell you. And I hope that we'll become more and more relevant by being smarter. Narrower but smarter, I think, is the direction we want to head.
Thanks very much. We're coming to the end of the period, which we need to move on, but I wanted to make one comment here, that Campus Store Committee is one of the standing committees of the University Assembly, and in our charter, the charter of the University Assembly, we have the following clause, that the University Assembly has legislative authority over policies which guide the activity of the, and one of the things, Cornell Store. And then it goes on to say, associated structure committees and boards shall consider and propose policies for their respective departments to the UA. This is a way of a segue to our next item, but it's also a way of talking about what we need to think about. There's been a lot of interest in the UA reflected in this presentation and the comments, and we'd like to I'd like to enlist one of us, and maybe there'll be a contest for this position, to become the liaison to the Campus Store committee, which a post which has been vacant for, I presume, a while, if you're on it, and therefore make this a much more, first of all, assume our responsibility more responsibly, and second, to make this kind of presentation and discussion more a regular part of our activities, the way we have done with planning and transportation recently. So if there are any of you, actually, I noticed that when I say any of you who want to volunteer, please write, nobody does. So I'm going to actually see you all face to face, ask if any of you have enough interest that in the next semester you can become engaged in the way that Randy has for the planning committee, or Dan for the transportation committee, becoming liaison to the Campus Store Committee when it meets. When does it meet?
Well, it hasn't met for 2 or 3 years. I've been at Cornell for almost 10 years, and probably for the first 6 years there was a regular process for appointing what was called an administrative board, and you would present to the University Assembly for the end of the semester in April or May with a program document. And then a couple of innovations were tried, because we've just been struggling. I think there was a position called an appointer or a convener, and that person had a great deal of difficulty identifying people to serve on the committee. Attendance at some of the committee meetings was low. We value very much this type of interaction, where once a year we could just come in and talk about the topics you want to talk about. But the sort of forced monthly meeting schedule didn't seem to be productive dialogue, and it took a lot of the cycle of planning.
Well, I think what I guess I'm saying is that if there could be one person here who takes on the charge of being a liaison to a committee, what direction that committee goes in, whether it be monthly meetings or it would facilitate keeping this channel of responsibility open, and also facilitate the answering of questions like this, and perhaps bringing future points. Would you be willing?
Absolutely. Me and Chris have actually been in contact with about setting up a meeting.
Terrific.
Sometime in the next couple of weeks, mm-hmm. discuss these issues, kind of not necessarily reestablishing the committee per se in the next week or so, but.
No, I understand, but then we should. You decide amongst you which one of the two, or you could be half and half. But we'll say that Mark and Chris are both involved in that activity. If you, one of you is a liaison, and we'll appoint you officially. I don't know that we need to vote on it.
I believe that there should be a vote on it.
All right. I move that. Can we choose one, and then you could Mark can be Mark Fontana as be the liaison of the University Assembly to the Campus Store Committee. Any second to that? Second is yes. Okay. And all in favor? Okay. Unanimous. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Very much. We've moved on now with that segue because that clause that I read is have legislative authority over policies which guide the activities of, and then I put in Kent Cornell Store, but the first one mentioned is the Department of Transportation and Mail Service. And as you have read in the emails and now have before you the letter of 21st of November from President Shorten about our resolution number 6. The paragraph that's important here is the third where he says, as stated in the University Assembly's charge, as presented on its website, so forth, the Transportation Advisory Committee provides advice and a means for community input. However, it does not have legislative authority over these issues. I think what he is citing as an inappropriate section of our resolution is section 2, where we say the University Assembly, with advice from the Transportation Committee, will continue to be responsible for deciding which specific proposed elements, projects, and policies and activities will be implemented. Let's leave aside the fact that that the president has reflected the impression in that paragraph that we had said the Transportation Advisory Committee was going to be responsible for deciding. In fact, we were saying that we, the University Assembly, allegedly are responsible for deciding. So, in a sense, everything he says is true, that the Transportation Advisory Committee provides advice but does not have legislative authority. It's the UA that has the legislative authority. So what we need to maybe make clearer in Section 2 is that by clarifying the language a bit, we can say something to the effect of, as enumerated in the Charter of the University Assembly, we, the University Assembly, with advice from Transportation, or with consultation with the Transportation Committee, will continue to exercise its legislative authority over policies which guide the activities of the Department of Transportation and Mail Services. Well, I'm just laying this out as what occurred to me, but we'll have comments. Any comments?
Well, yeah, I comment. Dan, thank you very much for catching that. I think he misread the letter, or the vice president for power administration management or something like that misread the letter, and I think it's perfectly clear, and I think we should send it back to him saying that why there was a misunderstanding, and that we are not saying that the TAC has power, but we're saying that the University Assembly has the power that was given to it by the trustees.
Well, there's one thing that we need to clarify, though, is that what we have the power to do, and we said we were responsible for deciding which specific proposed elements, project policies, and activities will be implemented, and that goes a little bit farther than our charge in the charter. which says that we have legislative authority over policies which guide the activities. So we may want to, in clarifying things, suggest to them, you know, not that you got it all wrong, we were not saying that, we do have everything we said. We might say, thank you for pointing out, thus and such, and we've clarified this to say exactly what the, what body, what legislative authority we have, and here it is, according to the court. That's what I came up with. Any other thoughts? Yeah.
That's good.
Dan.
We meant to say that we have authority over policy, but not day-to-day.
Day-to-day.
Correct.
Okay. Ellis.
We mentioned this so often. Policy. So we come up and say we have a policy. No more than 1% increase in fees every semester. Court knew what he was writing. Nobody in Day Hall is going to give up to us the ability to run parking and transportation. We have been down this road. If we want to see what happens, let's legislate something and see what Dave Hall does.
Well,
now, first he's gone round and round and round. He's trying to define what legislative authority means. He told us what he says it means, and I guarantee you, I'm more than right. happy to be wrong. We can put this any way you want, and this response is not going to be any different than what it is right now. He will retain in Dave Hall the authority to move parking together with the people of parking in the direction that they feel is relevant. They may want to let us know and all of that. But if you think that we could legislate, well, you know, we want this to be a free lot, but there will be so many parking spaces devoted to such and such.
But that's not a policy. That's not a policy. Sure, is Tim's a policy?
Yeah, Tim's would be a policy.
Yeah.
Right, and we can support Tim's with a resolution.
Yeah, but that's selective supporting of things. The point is that as legislative authority, now the question is, what is he willing to give up, or does he just wait for me to do something?
Right, and that, and you see, if we clause two, we reject the anything in the letter which says that we do not have legislative authority. We reject that by citing the charter to say that we do have legislative authority over policies. We're making a statement that your letter, albeit addressing the wrong thing, the Transportation Advisory Committee instead of the UA, that's a goof on their part, you know, and it's a silly goof, frankly, because it conflates the Transportation Advisory Committee with the UA, which but at least we overlook that and we say the charter says the UA has legislative authority over policies. What do you make of that in the letter? We don't say that, but what do you make of that? Then we are in the next step towards what you are asking us to do. But if we have an affirmation of the fact we have legislative authority over policy, then the test can come. Yes? That was my argument about it, Dan.
Well, I mean, I've been, you know, I don't want to stand it by myself, but I've been trying to push for us to make some legislative statement that pushes the issue to the forefront. Let's legislate no parking fee for anybody for 6 months. Let's push the issue and then see what happens in terms of what that means legislatively.
I agree with you, but if we let this go without...
I think we say you cited the wrong paragraph, that's fine.
Yes, but I think we can handle at least one part of it by trying to remove ourselves from specific proposed elements, projects, and activities.
I don't know if I could interject with a point of
not yet,
order.
Not yet. I think the debate has to go on. Yes.
Point of order.
Well, it's just the legislative authority here has this has come up before, as Alice has discussed, and I think the extent and nature of it is being misunderstood, and I'd like an opportunity to clarify.
The extent and nature of what?
The University Assembly's legislative authority.
Well, I don't know that that's an issue that can be clarified by it has to be something that grows out of the University Assembly and not out of the staff. So I think we want to discuss what we consider our legislative authority, not what the tradition has been.
I'm not talking about tradition. I'm talking about that legislative authority in the University Assembly's charter is circumscribed by the clause above it that says it's by delegation from the president.
Well, no. What happens is that the president has delegated us the legislative authority. So we have the right to legislate until the president removes his delegation. And I don't think we want to assume that because the president delegates us legislative authority, that means that if we assume it, it's only at his because it's been delegated. It's a process. It's a past tense. It's been delegated. Every action.
Not what it says.
It says, in fact, the next clause after that is legislative actions of the UA shall be reported to the president. If the action is acceptable, the president will so notify the assembly. It doesn't say you have to consult with the president first before you legislate.
No, it doesn't. But it also makes it clear that it has the effect of a recommendation to the president, that it does not.
I don't think it says anywhere that it's a recommendation to the president. Pursuant to authority delegated by Board of Trustees, the president hereby establishes the University Assembly. Articles 1 through 11 of this document constitute the charter. The University Assembly shall, by delegation from the president, have legislative authority over those aspects, etc. Okay? Yes, Dan.
A couple points. One is, from this, she talks about the assembly is only having input to administrative decisions. So I think you misunderstand. He also says that to have the University Assembly decision making capabilities to lose the authority of the trustees. The charter of the University Assembly came from the trustees and they can take it back. So it does not dilute their authority, it projects their authority through us. So it may dilute the authority of the administration, but it's projecting the authority of the trustees through us to make broad community based decisions. So important policies that go forward just don't come out of an administration, it comes from the whole community. Trustees for why he's been doing that. And that, you know, that's the definition of shared governance, which is before implementation of sort of the top down private corporate model the previous administration had was, you know, the wide path that Cornell laid out. From his letter, it appears that he's been getting bad advice and maybe bad historical notes from people that were behind in his administration from the previous. And that they're telling him that there is a unified executive, that the University Assembly is only an advisory, and, you know, he's getting that information. I think somebody needs to sit with him for 10 or 15 minutes and, you know, present an alternative way for him to go. It's true the University Assembly's actions can be vetoed by the president. That's always been true from the beginning of the charter. But this is something, a step, I think, the position of the president to be taken. Only if the assembly does something totally goofy or commits the university's funds that they don't have or something like that, and it, you know, be done seldom with a lot of regret, that you know, that he or she would have to set aside the decision of the assembly. But I don't think he's getting straight information about this, and I don't know exactly how to do it, but I mean, I think it's in the interest of administrators that have broad-based supporters to body like this. This didn't exist. They would have to invent one. And and make it a little stronger than advisory does a couple things. It, you know, it diffuses the parts of the community objectives, say, look, all these reps can vote for it. And also, having it more than advisory will get people to show up. But this was strictly an advisory committee to administration. You've never seen me again. I mean, there's just no way I would come to another talk shop. I don't know any of those. But if we're actually going to be making policy, great. If we're giving advice to somebody else. And I think that's one of the reasons that they set it up that way. So that people who think it is important enough to show up and offer their input.
Dean Walker.
I know a little bit about what happened, and what happened was the phrase decided which specific proposed elements, projects, activities will be implemented caused considerable unhappiness because it sounds as if the University Assembly is going to run the transportation department. And that is not, that was, I think, what really caused the difficulty. If you had simply said, I will continue to be responsible for the policies, then I think you're on absolutely safe ground because that is what the charter recommends. But I think what caused the difficulty is the fact that you had specific things that you were going to passed on. And I think the issue then, of course, becomes what is the policy? That's always his point. And I think that's a whole other issue. But I think to stand on the fact that you are continuing to be responsible for the policy is a very important point, and you are amazing.
Okay, I think we can keep just debating it a little. I want to get go around a little bit more again. Yes, does anybody else want to speak on it? I thought I saw somebody. Yeah, Randy.
Is it worthwhile putting an extra whereas, which quotes from the charter that we have legislative authority?
Well, what I suggested was as described in its charter, the university assembly, with advice, with concurrence with or consultation, I don't know which, the transportation advisory committee will continue to be responsible. Continue to exercise its legislative authority over policies, and that's a direct quote, which guide the activities of the Department of Transportation. I could even put quotes around that, meaning it comes right out of the charter. That's what I proposed. Is that?
Read it again, please.
Okay. This is clause two. As described in its charter, the university assembly, in consultation with the transportation advisory committee, will continue to exercise its legislative authority over policies which guides the activities of the Department of Transportation and Mail Services.
Could I comment on that?
Yes.
I don't like even giving the slightest hint or invitation to regard the consultation with the TAC as something which is specified by the charter. Is there a way of moving that outside of that clause, or further outside the clause?
Take it out. That's good. So that would read then as as described in its charter, the university assembly will continue to exercise, quotes, its legislative authority over policies which guide the activity of the Department of Transportation and Mail Services. Yes, Ellis.
I said that you will be receiving from me a resolution relevant to what we're saying, suggesting that the UA adopt a policy that people who drive hybrid cars to work will get a break on their parking to the extent of 50%.
Sounds great.
I will write that up.
That's fine. I have more resolutions the merrier, and we can debate it and we can submit it if we get concurrence. That makes perfect sense. But
I think it would be a good way to test things without being too adversarial and see what comes back, considering that the whole idea of sustainable energy and sustainability in general, it would be difficult to see what kind of arguments they would have against something like that, looking at some of the other things that they've said in terms of carpooling and all.
Well, we understand that, and imagine a debate on a resolution of that sort, we would have a representative from the Transportation and Mail Services Department, and okay.
I would ask something.
May I read this and ask if it's acceptable to everybody again? This is a substitution, and we'll have to draft a letter to the effect of conveying it. Be it therefore resolved that the university kind of supports objective principles and general summaries, blah, blah, and so forth. Then number two, as described in its charter, the university assembly will continue to exercise its legislative authority over policies which guide the activities of the Department of Transportation and Mail Services. That's number two. Then number three is the same. The university assembly will combine viewpoints and judgments of the faculty, staff, and so forth. Is that acceptable? Would someone move it?
Is it only that Department of Parking and so on? That
no.
Everything that would be could possibly come up would be within that purview?
Everything that possibly
come
I'm sorry.
I'm reminded a couple times.
I'm doing a resolution about a misunderstanding.
Just transportation.
There's a new, well, transportation and mail services is in our legislative authority.
Is this the original legislation?
Yeah. It had legislative authority of our policies which guide the activities of the Departments of Transportation and Mail Services,
so
Cornell United Religious Work, University Health Services, and the Cornell Store. So, okay, does anybody, do you want to move it, Dan?
Sure.
Okay, Dan moves it.
Can you read it, sorry, can you read it through, I'm listening to them, can you read it through one more time, please, if possible?
Sure. This is clause two. As described in its charter, the University Assembly will continue to, quote, exercise its, quote, legislative authority over policies which guide the activities of the Department of Transportation and Mail Services.
Marty, friendly amendment specified instead of described.
Thank you very much. Specified. No problem. Anyone else? Okay. All in favor? Any opposed? Any opposed? Okay, that passes. Any abstentions? Sorry. Okay, great. Thank you. In the letter, I just want some guidance from the letter. Or Dan, do you want to write the letter, a quick letter of conveyance? Because yours was, I mean, you could have some of the language that you had in your notes.
I guess the main idea is just one point on the proceedings generally. We didn't want to give a blank check. We didn't want to do things in our name.
No, I meant the letter to the president resubmitted it. Could you just jot me an email with that, and then we'll put it together in the revised. Okay. In the revised. Okay. Moving on, we have a report by Rodney, very short, about resolutions 1 through 5. Actually, resolutions 1 through 3 were passed before this session, so we don't need a report on that. So we only need to report on 4, 5, and anything else that comes to your mind. You have 4 and 5, don't you?
I do. Resolution 4, the resolution to establish the Family Services Committee, and Resolution 5, which is the resolution to establish Child Care Services Subcommittee of the Family Services Committee, were approved by President Horton, and he responded with some committee names, and I can't find the letter because I just got it, adding people to the committees, some of which were already on there, and new names. So that one was accepted. Resolution 6 is the one we were just talking about, I believe.
Yeah.
And Resolution 7, which is for the CJC, is been shipped off to the President for his consideration and action.
Okay. Thank you. Now, master plan resolution, which you have a copy of. Randy, do you want to present this? This would be resolution number 9.
So that's my ability to try to put in the things that we discussed about the master plan. And I took the liberty to write everything I was originally doing. Most of this language comes from the master plan itself. And I thought it was, I captured the things that interested us to a large extent. And I thought it was really particularly wonderful that the people here caught that, although the master plan was relatively transparent and how it came about, the assumptions that it was based on weren't. So what this basically says in two lines is we like the idea of the sustainability vision of the master plan, but we question whether there should be so much growth. Please explain to us the assumptions for growth that we need for.
Questions, comments?
Useful friendly amendment. Sorry, guys. Second paragraph from the bottom, it reads,
the assumptions of growth provided by Corvus upon which the master plan is based that over the next 30 years, comma, I would want a colon or something or a dash after based upon which the master plan is based, to wit, that over the next 30 years, no comma, the number. I think you just need something after based to say, and here's what that here's what that those assumptions of growth are, rather than just running on.
And then it'd be a semicolon after parenthesis 1,700, right? And then semicolon after parenthesis 6,500.
I think commas will do it.
Oh, commas? Okay.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, thanks. Actually, I had obviously had problems with it.
Okay. Any other questions?
Is that okay?
Any others? Do we, yes, Dan.
And they can kind of reference to it in this presentation, but it seems that the master plan pushes the fitness, recreation, green space, athletics totally off the campus, as well as agriculture, as I read the plan. And I'm not sure that was well thought out.
That was what?
I'm not sure that was well thought out. I mean, it doesn't seem... It just seems like they just more or less replaced open space and the horticultural, agronomic, and livestock, veterinary space, open space that you need for those things off campus. And it's not mentioned in there, but that's the result of it. And I don't think it's such a good place for any of those things, but I don't know how to. And I think it's a result that they didn't take input or didn't retain input at levels below the needs and social needs. You don't seem to think more abstractly, I guess, and less in terms of actual programs. Differentiate the point out from what's right for the students. I don't know whether it's off the limits or just.
Yeah, I guess we consider assumptions that questionable and needed by the.
I'm sorry, what?
Could we add that to the assumption that we questioned not only the assumption about growth, but the assumption about the replacement of the teaching reinstated, and the fact that there was very little discussion of that and the building over the place?
Both in terms of athletics, agriculture, agronomy, animal sciences, they're pretty much pushed to the boundaries.
So that would be teaching and athletic green spaces?
Yeah.
And athletic green spaces? Where would that go? What clause? What in what position?
It could go in the assumptions.
The assumptions. Oh.
Like
wishes to consider the growth assumptions and the absence of discussion of teaching and athletic green spaces? No, I don't know kind of.
I do not have that parenthesis, but not quite that book, because I was thinking about what you said. I do have a good way of working.
So where is that? But I look for this, but not departmental in the second draft. Where is that?
It's the second to last draft.
The idea being to say there are two issues on which the jury is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Both the one that you raised and the one that Elizabeth had asked.
And assumptions about the paving over teaching green spaces, pushing them off campus, and the expanding of the which forces students to travel, right? I mean, because if you're trying to keep down automobile traffic, you're forcing students to go out and teach. I'm surprised that the department's involved in
this is an added element to the agenda for reasons that it was uncertain whether we could pass something like this before, but it's valuable if we could do so before we met with the, Provost Martin, because we have something to sort of get our hands on. Let's, in conversation with her about, because, well, first of all, reflect our already you know, active participation in thinking about planning, but it will then give us something to talk about with her. If we could find a place to put something like that, we could. Okay, well, you work on that, and in the meantime, Randy, what I want to ask you is something to do with, you work on that, and then what I want to ask you is about this subcommittee to discuss questions of growth, to put together some points of focus in our discussion, focus points, in our discussion with Provost Martin, which is our next meeting. Could we have some volunteers to do so and a chair? Ellis, are you thinking you wanted to be? You were nodding. Oh, okay, yeah, you were missing anybody. Who wants to volunteer for this? Who knows about it?
I volunteer.
We need to, what was, just raise your hand, we're going to volunteer. No, this was a subcommittee to get together and discuss what are focus points in our discussion with the provost on the 30th of January when we're having a meeting, UA meeting with her, to discuss questions about growth and the campus plan and how does one decide what buildings will be built or why a building will be built, how are different departmental and college requests parlayed in decisions about what will go forward in the university. Those were going to be general questions because we raised them to the university planners in our conversation with her, saying who makes the decision that something will be built, and she said, not me, I just decide, you know, I just make a general plan about what space you might want to use. So yeah, I'm just reviewing what we did. Elizabeth, Dan, folks, come on, we need undergraduate participation, please. Now, it doesn't have to be the same people doing the other things.
Fine, I'll do it.
You'll do it. All right, Matt. All right, that's good. So, who's chairing? Who's convening it? Elizabeth, would you convene that? No, Dan already has a convening job. Elizabeth.
Convening means
just get folks together by email or somehow to discuss, to make a list of things that we want to bring up.
Before
and
we make a sense of that,
well, you want to start because when we come back, it'll be the 30th of January that we're having our meeting, and there's only a week before. We need to at least get email contact together and get the issues on the table, start thinking as a committee together about what we might do. Any of us on the UA who want to suggest things to talk with, sending them to Professor Sanders. Saunders, and would that, that be all right? You'd be a.
Wait, who else is on the ground to take your name? Dan, Ellis, Mike.
I wish we could volunteer people who aren't here because tomorrow you've already said you were going to do something, but I'd like to have at least a staff person or a graduate. James. Do you know what we're talking about?
Oh, yeah.
James is going to do it. Yeah, James is.
Possible.
How often do you get to confront the provost?
Or how often do you get to ask him the questions that you decided were important?
Well, okay. I don't know if I really have the time to dedicate. Like, really. Like, I'm really not trying to get, but I really don't know.
Well, this is over break.
Yeah. No, like, I'll be filling out PhD applications.
I see.
So.
Who else? No, it's not over break, please. I mean, you guys can go off and. Huh?
Yeah.
Oh, terrific. Terrific. That's a great combination. Great. Okay, Randy, what do you have?
I just decided to change what I had to be therefore resolved that the university can endorse the master plan and vision of sustainability, but wishes to consider the growth assumptions on which it's based. And its impact on agricultural teaching and athletic programs. And to that end, we look forward to beginning the campus-wide dialogue on the issue.
But it seems a little ambiguous. I mean, really concerned that teaching means that you intentionally.
Well, you could put that in the whereas's. Whereas somewhere, teaching and green spaces are being, there's no room for discussion. There's no, not
being pushed.
Well,
sort of,
you know, I guess teaching and green spaces is a good
teaching and athletic green spaces. Well, keep going. Proximate to.
Conveniently located to students and faculty access without traffic.
I mean, they could say, "Well, we're on a monorail to those." So I mean, my point is
that they tend to.
I mean, we if we keep it general enough, then we can raise it at least, you know, with more focus and get our own selves focused.
Well, the growth assumptions on which it's based actually says there'll be so many square feet for these new people that are coming. So if it doesn't have to be so many square feet.
So many square feet of what?
That's right. then there's room to at that level, we still can argue that one of the byproducts of these growth assumptions is losing the green space.
Well, that growth is taking place at the research grad student level because the undergraduate admissions do remain flat for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, well, that's already in here.
If you're interested in the athletics, graduate students, they like to go, but the impact is really on the undergraduates and undergraduate course, people looking at athletics.
All right, we have 2 minutes, and I'd like to at least say that we're not going to do this or do it. So what I think we should do is work with what Randy has. And would you read it again? Be it therefore resolved that the University Assembly endorses the Master Plan and its vision of sustainability, but wishes to consider the growth assumptions and its impact on agricultural and athletic teaching agriculture and athletics green spaces.
Maybe just green spaces?
Why did you say green spaces allotted to teaching agriculture and athletics?
Intended for teaching agriculture, what?
And athletics.
Okay, then what we have is, therefore resolved the University Assembly, but wishes to consider the growth assumptions upon which it is based, and what? And absence of, or the absence of green spaces.
And its impact on green spaces. Yeah.
Wait.
The absence of green space is intended for teaching agriculture and athletics.
Particularly, the assumption about growth is that about.
This is getting too long.
It is.
Yeah, okay.
I like put a period after that, you can say. We're particularly concerned that there has been no debate over growth assumptions.
No, I think we need to parallel the growth assumptions with the teaching and green space, because if we set it aside, we're particularly concerned, then it makes it appear that the growth assumptions are only in the area of green space that we're concerned. We're also, as Ellis was saying, concerned. We can't really write this all down. Be it therefore resolved that the University Assembly endorses the Master Plan and vision of sustainability, but wishes to consider the growth assumptions upon which it is based, and the absence of discussion of or of. The absence of
There hasn't been deliberation about the present day with marginalization we're pushing out. What's the
loss of proximal
realization.
To that end, it looks forward to. Okay. Do you have that, Randy?
Yes.
Okay, do you want to read it?
Be resolved that the University Assembly endorses the master plan and vision of sustainability, but wishes to consider the growth assumptions upon which it is based and the loss of proximal green space for teaching and athletics. To that end, it looks forward to beginning the campus-wide dialogue on issues from the campus and to the university-wide January
2000. Any suggestions, comments?
Did you want agriculture in there? Because that wasn't in what?
Teaching. I think it could be even more general. Agriculture is part of the teaching, but it could, maybe other people use green spaces for teaching too. Anthropologists do it.
Sure.
I don't know either, but there's a future.
We should be more specific. Is it that you specifically say agriculture, agriculture,
well, you're leaving out a whole bunch of people who might. I mean, what's wrong with just leaving it general and saying the absence of green spaces?
Okay, just that they just don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Well, as long as you put proximal teachers and green spaces in the room.
Yeah.
If you don't put proximal, they say, well, it's
right. Right. So we're leaving it from loss of proximal green space for teaching and athletics. Who would like to move this?
Elizabeth moves it.
Second. From Matt.
No, Jules. Jules, second. All those in favor?
Are there opposed? Any abstentions? Good. Do I hear a motion to adjourn? Or any other questions or thoughts?
Yeah,
yes. Oh, yeah, that was going to be brought up. What was the suggestion of where on the 30th?
Oh, with Biddy Martin, we should have it off over at East Hill.
Oh. Not bad.
It's like walking to those fields.
Well, you know, we could have it in the new East Hill office building, for that matter. What spaces can you reserve for us?
Well, we have to check with the various buildings. I mean, G10 Biotech might be a possibility, although there's a fee for that. Willis Street Hall might be a possibility.
Although there's what?
Fee.
A fee. Even for the University Assembly?
Oh yeah.
Oh, could you provide us with a list of possible places to go, and if the minimal fees fees? Yes.
Can we just empower our staff to make the best decision? You guys are smart. You guys have done this. Why? They don't need to bring that back to us.
Well, actually, I think there's some interest in the UA of making some decisions about it.
But deciding a room, deciding over Willow Street Hall versus XYZ room, and other room.
University scheduling to identify a venue you prefer.
Yeah. All right, hold it. Stop it. Breaking down.
Are you talking about just next week, or are you talking about
next week? We don't have a meeting.
Kind of next semester, okay.
We're talking about
happy to book any room that you request.
Right. So why don't you just tell us what rooms we are possible, and we'll weigh in.
You want executive committee to make the story of all the rooms in the university?
No, of course not. As Jane said, we'll rely on your judgment of which ones would be the best ones to fulfill our desire to get around the campus some. And to find a nice room to have our meeting in, but also appear visible to other people. North Campus Union,
or, you know, Purcell is a possibility, the West Campus, if there is such a thing still, or Alice Cookhouse, I don't know, you know. Point is, find four or five venues we can make a choice, and we're bringing the meeting to other people. How many have an interest in having this happen? Okay, how many think it's a silly idea? Well, how many do not have an interest in that? To have the diff, no, not every time, but to move around the campus.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
Okay, fine. So, all right, so that's what we're going to do. We're going to find five different places, and then we will make a choice of which one to go where, to go when, okay?
Only concern that I have with that is that there are schedules that have been printed, like the student planner that already have. Am I mistaken? The meeting is already down to this location.
And it's affected us tremendously. Look at all the students that have poured in. Okay? I think we need to get ourselves out.
It's not in the planner this year. It's not in this one anyway. And it was last year.
Okay, so I think what we need is four or five different venues and different places around the campus. Do I hear a motion to adjourn? We need that official. Motion moved. Second. All in favor? Great. See you guys next semester. Congratulations on a great semester. So, Ari, what we're talking about is getting four or five venues that we can go in different places where we achieve the purpose of getting ourselves.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.